Welcome to Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast. We are your hosts, Hannah Elizabeth
and Kate Mitchell. This is a place where you can find true crime tales, morbid mysteries and all things spooky.
We are two scousers with a true crime and red wine passion. Expect wine reviews, a few howls and much more.
Our podcast does include graphic content and explicit language. Discretion is advised.
So grab a bevy, it's about to get heavy.
Welcome back!
Episode 6, baby.
Dead cheesy. Have I got red wine teeth?
No, you're all good. No, you did, but... Welcome back to episode 6 of Don't Talk to Strangers, a true crime podcast. We are your hosts.
Hannah Elizabeth.
And Kate Mitchell. We're bringing you true crime tales while drinking some red wine.
Of course.
You know what's dead funny? I've only remembered to do this intro in like the last episode. I don't even think I've done that.
Oh, no.
But welcome. If you're new here, hey. I'm going to tell Hannah a true crime case, some she'll be familiar with, some she won't be. We're going to do a deep dive into all things true crime and red wine.
Love that. Our favourite things.
Our two passions in life.
Yeah, so actually we have filmed like multiple episodes tonight, so we are a bit tipsy, and I'm not going to lie, I am the worst culprit for like, what is it like? I have two sips of red wine.
She's a fiend.
Apart from that, my teeth and my lips are jet black.
Like she attracts the dot. It's weird. I don't know.
Some people take like a bottle.
Some people don't at all.
What?
Why? I've drank a bottle of red and looked at myself and been like, oh, you wouldn't know.
What? Are you joking? I'm like a witch. Like a witch.
Could it be like veneers? Do they attract it
but
more?
But how many people have veneers? And some people don't
But a lot
it.
Of people don't as well at the same time. I don't. So I don't think... I don't know.
I don't know, but my lips haven't got veneers on and they're fucking crusty and red.
I love veneers.
They are just violent. I feel like a witch, but yeah, anyway. But how are you?
No, fine.
Are we a bit tipsy?
Well, not really, like...
Yeah.
Hannah, right, the thing is, I pride myself on self-control.
Yeah, I do not.
So, no, but I have
that
to, like...
That doesn't even go in my same sentence as Hannah Elizabeth.
In the past, when we've recorded, I've been driving, so I pretend.
Yeah.
No, I don't pretend.
She's pure grassing herself up.
I'll have a little sip, but I won't be... I'll be thinking, well, I've got to drive in
I
an
just
hour.
Back it.
Whereas we're in Hannah's outhouse. So, Hannah's
my
like...
My bar. Woo-hoo! I've got a pub in the garden.
She has. It's sick. So she'll be like, let's go, whereas I'm going like...
And because she's telling me a story, I'm backing the wine because I'm sitting here like listening and, ooh, lovely sipping
my
wine.
I'm not driving tonight, so.
Yeah, you can.
We've recorded two episodes, so.
My head's kind of, my head's throbbing a bit and like.
Throbbing.
And I'm, a bit pissed.
Well, we were going to say like, how's your new year getting on? Like, have you stuck to your new year's resolutions, Hannah?
I didn't make any, you know, the only thing I'll say is, obviously, I want to go me PT more.
Yeah.
Stick to that. Drink more water. Not drink as much wine, but didn't stick to that.
this is work, babe.
This is work, different. I don't know. No, I didn't stick to it. I don't stick to rules.
We're talking about
the rules.
The future yet. So I'm like, did you have your good resolutions?
Definitely not.
Still December for us.
I can just look in the crystal ball that I didn't.
Yeah, no, I'm going to say I probably... stuck to some, or better than others.
It's like summer bodies are made in winter, so we need to get
you
the
You say
gym.
That, I know, but I just seem to miss that little part
but you
of your life
I
every
just think
year.
The arse, but like, in the winter, the food is so fit. Like, all my cooking is like, homely, you know, I'm obsessed with like cooking, and it's all like homely winter meals, and I just love the whole thing. So do you, Christmas cheese, charcuterie, red wine every day.
Say it again.
Cheese, brie, camembert, like just give it to me, babe, like love it.
No, like you are right.
Pigs in blankets. Oh, I mean, we had them before.
No, shout out to the neighbourhood cafe in Woolton.
Can we just talk about that? It was a big, the Christmas butty in neighbourhoods is something else. It's like, you can't even fit it in your mouth. It's that big.
And it was dead funny because I went to Hannah, how are you going to eat that? Like, I cut mine in half and was
I just stuffed it in. Dip it in the gravy. You get sprouts on the side. We got pigs in blankets. We got rosemary roosties. It was... Oh, and I got a hot apple drink.
Oh, yeah. What was it called? A steamed apple.
A a steamed apple. So I was like, I've had hot cider before, which is stunning. I don't even like cider, but...
Same.
I mean, when I was little, I'd drink them big, like, 7-Up bottles of cider. Like, no. And then I'd, like...
Frosty Jacks.
Yeah, 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 and the was, big bottle. It was like,
£2 or £3 for a 3-litre rotten bottle. Yeah. And I just remember cider coming out my nose vomiting.
Oh, my God, same!
So I can't drink cider
I'd
now.
Be on a roundabout. I think I've told you this before, with either that or Lamborghini. And I'd do this thing where... I'd lie my head back on the roundabout, neck it, and get the lads to push spin. Me. So it was like going to me. Not that I need to go to my head any fucking quicker than it does. And I would do
That's
that.
That's like the ultimate spinny. But no, see, I was a goth. So I was.
I love a goth. I am a goth at heart.
You are, but I was.
A goth. I love it.
Emo. And I was at the Barfly. And we were underage. And we'd go, like, let's get bottles of Frosty Jack. So we'd drink. Gallons of it before we got there. I'd then be in a mosh pit and I'd then be vomiting.
Sick, love it. No, I know that thing of cider coming out your nose, but cider, blue. I love lager. Like, I am a pint drinker, aren't
I?
Yeah,
I love
like,
pints.
I'll drink pint of lager like a man, but cider bloats me even more. You know the way everyone loves, like, Copperberg, summer fruit, can't bear.
No, don't get me wrong. I can't.
Knocks me.
I can drink. Fruit cider.
I'd never order that.
Yeah, like if someone gave me it or like at a barbecue, I'd be like, oh, okay. Or if I didn't want to get drunk
it's
quick,
bloating.
I'd drink, I'd like sip it. But you know what I actually love, and I don't want to admit it, but I love it.
Strongbow!
Dark fruit.
No, I like the original. No. The pissy original no. Strongbow.
I love Strongbow dark fruit.
But you know why? Because I'm not a sweet tooth, am I?
Oh, yeah, true.
I like the Apple original big 7-Up bottle of shit.
No.
Yeah, coming out your nose from it.
I mean, drink responsibly, guys.
Why are we talking about cider?
I don't know, but I'm enjoying
it. Oh, the hot apple. Oh, so, yeah, like, love a mulled wine. We should have had a mulled on here for Christmas.
But it's now.
I know, but back in the day, we should have had a mulled. For fuck's sake, I could have done it in the pan, the pink pan. But, yeah, no. This hot apple drink was stunning. It was spiced and it wasn't a bevy. It was just like a
And I'm not normally a hot tea drinker, but I tasted it and I was like,
and it was
like,
nice, wasn't it? My head's actually throbbing and booming.
Well, we haven't drank much water today. We've worked all day.
So my New Year's resolution isn't going to go good, is it?
It will. Be posy.
Right, so I'm not going to lie. I've already sipped this wine because the last one on the last episode, which obviously we filmed today,
Hannah didn't love it.
So this is a Merlot from Chile, and this is Isla Negra Seashore, smooth and aromatic.
Isla Negra, but you know what?
Merlot's
though,
heavy though.
I love a. I know you're not a white drinker, but I love a Oyster Bay.
Oh yeah, you tell me about that in the Wesso.
I think you'd like that. No, because that was the one where I went to shop, went seen it and thought I'm shocked because it's a good like quality wine. It's a bit more expensive.
Oh, knocks me.
And I went to the till and they charged me $15.99 for it. And I thought, hang on a minute. Obviously paid for it and walked out like. But that's
no,
a very
I'm
nice
sorry,
white
wine. Sorry, white wine is a head throbber.
No, it is, but I don't drink it willingly, generally. No, if there's Oyster Bay,
have they not got a red?
They might do, actually.
We'll have to try that.
Because it's
the
like the chicken wine, which we didn't actually get to drink.
By the way, can I just say, let me just stop you there.
Go on.
Do you know the chicken wine?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asked. I discovered that. Me. I discovered that a long time ago. You know, it's like a trendy thing now on like TikTok that kids drink chicken wine.
You know what's funny? I remember buying it.
I've been onto that.
Years ago and taking it to my mate Yasmin's and going, this is random, it's got a chicken on it. And we both were like, ooh. But we didn't then go like, oh my God, I'm going to buy chicken wine all the time.
It's so cheap.
Well, I do think it is. It's like a tenner. The tenner.
Colin Sykes, £6.
Oh, I go the co-op. Yeah. It's expensive.
It's cheap.
I mean, £10, I would think that... I'm saying expensive, but that's like on the dearer end, I think, if I was just grabbing a wine.
No, chicken wine, £7, right?
And it's the Colin
the
Sykes.
The rosé, it's kind of Whispering Angel vibes. It's dead nice.
Very pale blush.
Let me tell you, it gets me...
Oh, you've said, rotten.
If I have two glasses of that, I don't know where I am. Like, it gets me blooded.
She's anyone's.
I'm anyone's. But there was... You wouldn't want me after that.
I would, babe. Don't worry.
They've got a red one and you smashed it on the pack last week or whatever. But
two episodes ago.
Now, all these, like, cool kids are talking about chicken wine. I'm like, Excuse me.
We've drank chicken wine that. For years.
I named that. We've known about it. Me mate Jamie was on to it.
See, I didn't. You're onto something there because I didn't even call it.
It's called like Le Femme Veal or something.
But I would go like, oh, should we get the one that's got the hen on it?
Yeah, I go the chicken one.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I went to Jamie's and she was like, chicken wine. And then I said to you, I've got the, you were like, chicken wine, and everyone's onto it. But now, all these young kids are onto the chicken.
You should have trademarked it, babe.
I know. Right, anyway, sorry. Merlot, heavy as fuck Merlot, isn't it? Do you not think?
Hannah knows the differences. I do. And no, I just,
do you not know?
I just know that I like Rioja. Like, that's like, it's meant to have less sulfates in it, which is what gives you the hangover.
Oh, need that.
No, no. You don't want the sulfates. So, like, Rioja's no. low in sulfates. Yeah, so that's why I like that. Oh, sorry, yeah. I thought you meant you want the sulfates.
No, do a four. Well, these are going to give me loads of sulfates, so I'll be in hell tomorrow.
But it'll say it on the back somewhere,
sulfates.
So, this sulfates.
Is 10.5% vol.
That's quite low.
No idea what that means.
No, that's low. Like, oh, chicken wine's 13%.
This one says, I know.
She knows.
You don't have to tell me. Know your limit. The UK... Yeah, I'm not going to read that. Isla Negra is a seaside village famous for the artists and writers who come and who are inspired of the coast and the mystical landscape. Good. Our wines capture the charms and characteristics of this unique setting all in one bottle. No one's asked.
No, I can picture it.
Really? A sumptuous ruby red Merlot with rich aromas of plum.
No, plum. You said it, you don't like plum. It's in most reds, I'm going to say.
Me, I think plum, cherry and dark chocolate. Velvety on the palate with an enduring finish. An ideal wine to serve with tomato-based pasta. Again, sauces and cheese.
Well, that's a good going with us. So.
Lovely. We love you. Tastes well better than the other shit.
Well, let's do a fake taste test as if you haven't tried it.
Okay, love you.
Love Cheers. You. Cheers. Grab a bevy.
It's about to get heavy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it is
see,
so much nicer. Yeah, it is.
That other shit, no, not for me. Sweet.
But I agree, like, some are nicer than others, but I am the type that, like, as soon as I have a glass of it, not off.
I know, I am normally, but I was like, right.
So,
I feel like we
episode 6.
Shit.
I mentioned last week that, or last episode, that this is, like, less known.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, again, there might be a glimpse of this that you might go, hang on a minute.
But I didn't last time you said
oh,
that.
Yeah, true, actually. This is less heavy, I would say. Oh, my God, I'm burping already.
But grab a bevy.
But grab a bevy. It is still going to get heavy, obviously. All these cases are heavy, but I just think it's a bit more interesting.
Okay.
So, we are covering the case of John Edward Robinson, the internet's first serial killer.
No! Oh, I love, like, dun, dun, the dun. Internet ones. Mm-hmm. Is it through... Okay, I love all that. Like, you know when Netflix do, like, a documentary the way they did, like, Don't Fuck With Cats? Yeah. The way they told that was, like...
This doesn't include, like, web sleuths. So you got it's early days of the internet.
Yeah, yeah, chat room shit.
It, yeah.
Chat roulette.
Kind of. Oh, I love chat roulette. We need to do that one night. I've done that for like 10
we?
Years.
No, I did. In me mate Joel's not even that long ago, I was howling.
Is it still the same? Like, penis, 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 like.
No, it weren't dicks. It was just like mad people. Like, it was just, I don't know, we were blathers and it was funny. Oh. It weren't dicks, really.
I just remember sometimes, like, being on it being like funny and then sometimes thinking, like, am I doing something illegal here? Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, people stopped to, like, pretend to kill themselves on it. And there was all, like, mad stories. But then, like, people were finding, like, Justin Bieber on it.
No, I didn't find
Kim
him.
And Kim Kardashian. No.
I didn't
find Justin.
I didn't. I'd be like, babe.
You did it, what, not that long ago?
Like, about but 6 months ago.
Justin's not going to be on it.
Hello.
Hello.
I'd be like, babe.
Oh, my God.
Go on.
So, yeah. John Edward Robinson. Again, I'm going to probably refer to him as Robinson, John, sorry.
Robbo,
Eddie. But it's, sorry, I just, I can't
yeah,
remember
we are
how doing.
Chatting pure shite.
I know,
and we need
sorry.
To shut up.
But he is known as the internet's first serial mm-hmm. killers. So,
He's
oh my God, I've
bell.
Not done his horoscope.
No.
I need, sorry, just a few moments later.
Can I just wait then?
I mean, we're still going to keep this in.
Maybe just cut this little bit out.
No, keep it in. It's funny.
Tom.
No, keep it in. Star sign. Star. I'm sorry. Everyone. Okay, so let me just type that because I've got no fucking connection.
Oh, what is he? What date of
Capricorn. But okay. Just remember Capricorn.
I don't really know a lot.
John Edward Robinson, infamously known as the internet's first serial killer, terrorised vulnerable women across the United States for nearly two decades. Manipulative, cunning and outwardly charming, Robinson preyed on those seeking employment, companionship or refuge, and he exploited their vulnerabilities to satisfy his twisted need for power and control.
Mm-hmm.
Using a combination of forged identities, fraudulent schemes, and eventually the anonymity of the early internet, Robinson's calculated actions resulted in at least 8 known victims and numerous scams, yet his true body count remains uncertain, as some of his victims were never, ever found.
Oh.
So John Edward Robinson was born on December the 27th, 1943, in Cicero, Illinois, which makes him a Capricorn.
Yeah, that's kind of like Boxing Day.
Oh, yeah. He was born into a working-class suburb of Chicago. He was the third of 5 children born to Henry and Alberta Robinson. From an early age, Robinson's life was shaped by an oppressive and unstable household. His father, an abusive alcoholic, frequently directed his frustrations at his children. Meanwhile, his mother was a harsh disciplinarian, controlling nearly every single aspect of the household.
Mm-hmm.
The toxic environment fostered deep insecurities in Robinson and likely contributed to his later compulsion to exert control over others.
Mm-hmm.
So he had no control in younger life.
Yeah.
He craved it more than normal mm-hmm. in his older life. Despite his turbulent home life, Robinson showed an aptitude for leadership and ambition during his early years. He attended a local Catholic school and developed an interest in academics, particularly science. His teachers described him as intelligent but aloof, traits that would later define his interactions with others. He was known to have a manipulative streak as a child, often bending situation in his favour while avoiding direct conflict and confrontation. Like, to be young and manipulative, I think, is, like,
is scary. Mad, yeah. Like, to have to that, like, skill be that clever, yeah.
Is like, alarming.
Yeah, like, you know how to play people.
Mm-hmm. In 1957, at the age of 13, Robinson achieved a moment of fleeting success. He would become the cornerstone, which would become the cornerstone of his carefully crafted public image. So he's got, like, a taste of fame.
Yeah.
When I seen that, I was like, what did he do? And then you'll see. He became an Eagle Scout, which is an accomplishment that earned him the opportunity to travel to London as part of the Boy Scout, and he performed and sang for Queen Elizabeth
II,
which is a rare honour for a young American. Yeah. Which I get
to,
that,
like,
now.
Go to London, yeah.
Yeah, I get that.
That's a big deal then.
This experience bolstered his sense of importance and hinted at his ability to project an image of success and ego and legitimacy.
Mm-hmm. But he could have gone a nice way.
100% he could have. After returning from London, Robinson aspired to a career in the medical field.
Oh?
He enrolled in Morton Junior College to study X-ray technology, to be a radiologist.
Mm-hmm.
However, his academic ambitions were short-lived. Robinson was indifferent as a student and eventually dropped out. So he basically didn't have the knack to get to that level, like to be a radiologist, to study medicine. He also cited financial difficulties and had a lack of focus. This failure marked the beginning of a long pattern of incomplete endeavours, lies and fraudulent schemes designed to mask his inadequacies. So do you know what I mean? Like, because he wasn't being able to do what he wanted, he just faked it till he made it.
Yeah.
Schemes, lies, deceit. Same. So he's transitioning to criminality now. By the late 1960s, Robinson began to display a clear pattern of deceit and manipulation. After leaving school, he fabricated his credentials, to secure employment whilst he wanted to be an x-ray technician. So he was trying to study it, but then forged his CV basically to get a job.
Yeah.
His forgeries allowed him to obtain several high-paying jobs at hospitals across Illinois and Kansas. However, his lack of actual skills and his tendency to embezzle money from his employers resulted in repeated terminations. Robinson frequently fled to new cities to escape the consequences of his actions, leaving behind a trail of fraud and betrayal. And I also think as well, sorry to put in on myself, but this is the early days when you can do shit like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No one's speaking to no
you're
one.
Getting away
there's no
with
internet.
It.
You yeah, can't yeah, type yeah. the name in and something flags up. This is when you could, like, you get done for doing bad checks. Remember,
yeah,
that was
yeah,
always
yeah,
a
yeah.
thing. Like, oh, we writ a bad check and got 4 months probation. That's where we're in this era.
Hey, I feel like that light's making me go pure gauzy. I'm like...
You can't see. Just look at me. You're all
I'm
good.
Like that.
In 1964, Robinson married Nancy Jo Lynch, a woman described as loyal and unsuspecting.
Aww.
I know. The couple would go on to have 4 children, living what appeared to be a stable suburban life. Yet behind closed doors, Robinson's marriage was far from idyllic. He was emotionally distant and increasingly drawn to a secret life of crime and deviance. As his wife raised their children, Robinson used his charm and his intelligence to defraud businesses and individuals, gradually honing the manipulative skills that would later make him a deadly predator.
Oh.
I am a bit cheesy sometimes, aren't I?
These words.
I know. Robinson became a scoutmaster, a baseball coach, a Sunday school teacher, and in 1977...
So he was, like, wanting to be a bit of a
do-gooder. John Wayne Gacy.
In the community. Look at me. That's the ego again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, look at me. I'm a leader. I'm a do-gooder.
Yeah, yeah. In 1977, he was named to the board of directors of a local charitable organisation where he forged letters from its executive director to the mayor of Kansas City and from the mayor's civic leaders naming him as the organisation's man of the year. So he's like...
GQ man of the year.
Man of the year, hon, but it's all forged recommendations.
Okay.
Boss. It's not good, but... Like,
boss.
It's just clever. They're like fair play.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not what he does later,
he
but...
He loves, like,
like, this con man side of him, like, whatever. Like, it's yeah, not like, good, but, like, go off.
You do
but,
you, boo.
Yeah, but then it gets heavy.
Yeah.
Under that guise, he hosted an awards luncheon in his own honour.
As if...
During the 1970s, Robinson became involved in large-scale fraudulent schemes. He established fake companies, solicited investors, and embezzled funds. One of his most audacious crimes and scams involved creating a medical consultancy company called Equi2, which he used to recruit employees under the guise of legitimate business and opportunities. So do you get me? Like, he's making companies, getting people to invest, but robbing that money
off,
and then going to people, come and work for me, and then getting and scamming
yeah,
them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But up to now, I'm just a bit like, oh.
He's a con man.
You do it.
We know many.
You do it, babe.
No, we don't know many. Like, I'm saying, like, I don't know from them. But I mean, we've heard of many.
Like, you do it, babe. Right, I'm not that angry.
That's fine. It will change. Once hired, the employees often found themselves unpaid, exploited, or coerced into compromising situations. Robinson's criminal activities caught up with him several times during this period, resulting in short stints in jail for embezzlement and theft.
I'm very curious how this is going to escalate.
Oh, it does, baby.
Because to go from that to, like, that...
No, like, it makes sense. No, I say it makes sense, like, it's justified. It's not. But I get why it got to that
really?
Point. Yeah.
What, he had to bin them off?
He kind of.
Yeah.
However, he frequently avoided harsher sentences by leveraging his charm and convincing authorities that he was a reformed man.
Mm.
His ability to manipulate others extended into the legal system, allowing him to continue his schemes with minimal disruption. So I get this, because if you think about the typical criminal, it's drugs, it's theft.
Although
he is a thief. It's like that kind of, what's the word, like gritty crime.
Yeah.
Where, like, if you're a drug addict, you are painted in that brush. Whereas he's got a suit on, going, oh, no, it was a mistake.
Yeah, he's a top blogger. Yeah.
He's good. It was a mistake. I did embezzle money.
He's a good chatter.
I've learned my lesson. It won't,
There's so many of them, like the goods at the chat, so if you get away with murder.
And he's got a suit on, so you think, oh.
Yeah, like you think, like, oh, he's sick, he's a big businessman. You trust him, you put your trust in him, yeah.
Exactly. After completing some probation, I'm burping again, sorry, all this man.
I didn't burp after that.
I don't know why I'm burping. We haven't even, I've got the hiccups now. After completing some probation in 1979, Robinson was arrested for embezzlement and check forgery, which he served 60 days in jail. After his release, he formed a bogus hydroponics business. It's just
no idea. No
clue. You don't need to go into it. And stole $25,000 from a friend who he promised a fast return on his investment so he could pay for his dying wife's medical care.
Oh, he said that?
No, so this friend was saving money to pay for his dying wife's medical care. And he went, if you give me that $25,000, I'll turn it into half a mil.
Turn it, yeah. Oh, fuck, that's, evil.
But he stole it.
Bastard.
By the early 1980s, Robinson's fraudulent ventures alone were no longer enough to satisfy his need for control and power. He then began to target women, particularly those who were vulnerable due to financial hardship, single parenthood, or a desire for companionship.
But hang on. So I'm getting this fella who's like into fraud and he wants to make money, however, like, you know, scam people, rob money. So I thought you were going to say he's going to start killing people off and robbing them, but now you're saying he's targeting women with financial problems.
But what you're saying is still kind of going to happen. But it's the, what you remember, he lacks power and control. Getting this money just becoming isn't enough of a buzz for him now. So he needs something more.
I'm so gauzy.
You're not, I promise you, you're not.
I'm like looking out of one eye like this.
Robinson's first known murders occurred in the mid-1980s, coinciding with the escalation of his predatory tendencies. Robinson is known to be responsible for 8 homicides, but his total victim tally remains unknown. Kansas and Missouri police note that long stretches of Robinson's time remain unaccounted for. You will have had fake names, you know, that kind of thing. And considering how some of Robinson's confirmed victims were never found or not reported missing, authorities feared that there are additional uncovered victims, if that makes sense. He's maintained the secrets about what he's done with the women and he won't ever tell us. It's the last control he's got, quote, said one of the investigators. There are probably other barrels waiting to be opened and other bodies waiting to be found.
Okay, barrels. There's a little teaser.
Barrel action. In 1984, having established 2 more fraudulent shell companies, Robinson hired Paula Godfrey, who was 19, to work as a sales representative for Robinson's management firm, Equi2. So he's got this Equi2, it's a medical consultant firm, he needs a sales rep. He's found 19-year-old Paula.
Yeah, young.
Godfrey was interested in pursuing a career and told her family that Robinson had arranged for her and a group of women to fly to San Antonio, Texas, to enroll in a clerical skills course.
Yeah, bless her. She must have thought that was like
a big break.
Sick, yeah.
Robinson picked Godfrey up at her residence in Overland Park on September the 1st, 1984, and drove her to the airport for her flight. After hearing nothing further from her, the parents then filed a missing. So he picked her up from the airport. The parents never heard from her again.
Wow.
They then filed a missing persons report. Police questioned Robinson because obviously she's told her parents, I've got this job with this fella. Police questioned him, who denied any knowledge of her whereabouts. Several days later, her parents received a typewritten letter with Godfrey's signature at the bottom, thanking Robinson for his help and asserting that she was okay but did not want to see her family.
Culty.
The investigation
was given girl in the box.
Oh my god, we'll have to do that.
We have to do that. Do you remember I tried to find that documentary for so long and I was like, you need to watch it, pure
stuff. And then it was on like the BBC the whole time,
wasn't it? No, it was like on Channel 5 and Channel 5, I think is brutal. Like, if there's a documentary on there, it's heavy.
It's in detail.
And then it was on Morbid, actually, they covered it, or one of them covered it. But I always tell people, have you seen the girl in the box? Like, no, and I can never find that.
Yeah. No, but I think it is. It's either Channel 4 or we Channel 5 need to do or, that like, one. BBC, but it's on there.
It's one of them. No, it's not heavy. BBC. It's Channel 4 or 5 because it's heavy. It? Yeah.
It's heavy. The investigation was eventually terminated as Godfrey was of legal age and there was a letter saying she was okay.
Yeah, so, yeah.
And there was no evidence of wrongdoing. So
didn't write the fucking letter, babe.
No trace of Godfrey has ever been found.
Oh, so she went off with this fella. Fuck knows what happened.
Said to her family, I'm okay. The police dropped it and they've never found her.
Wow, that is mad.
In 1985, using the alias John Osborne, Robinson met 19-year-old Lisa Stassi and her four-month-old daughter, Tiffany Stassi, at Home House, which was a shelter for homeless women in Kansas City. Stassi told relatives that she was joining the Kansas City Outreach Program, which was an organization designed to assist young mothers. Robinson presented the program to Lisa as a way to receive a free room and board while studying for her GED. So GED is like, you know, I've got a 4.5. Like a 4.0 average GED. It's like general education, something, maybe.
Oh, no idea.
It's like our GCSEs or A level. Yeah. That's their equivalent. So she's basically been promised a room, board while she studies, to then get a job. She's a single mum.
Like, he is clever, really, because he's offering these vulnerable people, like,
a new life.
A way out, you know? Yeah.
He promised Stassi a job and stable living situation in Chicago in exchange for signing several sheets of blank stationery. Lisa and Tiffany checked into room 131 at the Roadway Inn in Overland Park in early January 1985. Lisa told her relatives that Mr. Osborne arranged and paid for their new accommodations. On January the 10th, Robinson arrived at Lisa's sister-in-law's house, where Lisa and Tiffany entered his vehicle and returned to the motel. A few days later, Robinson contacted his... So this is fucked. A few days later, Robinson contacted his brother and sister-in-law who had been unable to adopt a baby through the traditional channels, informing them that he knew of a baby whose mother had killed herself. And for $5,500 in legal fees, the couple received Tiffany, whose identity was confirmed by DNA testing in 2000.
No.
This happened
in 1985. No, so it took all that time.
So his brother, his own brother, has adopted one of the victim's babies illegally.
Do you not think when it all came out, the brother didn't kind of like question that?
Possibly.
But there he is getting his dollar in again now. He's putting a price on it.
And this, he got a set of authentic appearing adoption papers with the forged signatures of two lawyers and a judge. The mum was never heard from again.
He's a case, him.
Fucked.
Like, he knows what he's doing, doesn't he? Clever. He's like, clever, yeah. Like, yeah. He's
like
not...
we've got to give him credit as much as he's...
He's clever. Monster. He's a case, yeah.
Yeah. 27-year-old Catherine Frances Clampett. Sorry about that. Sorry. Left her child with her parents in Wichita Falls, Texas, and moved to Kansas City to live with her brother's family to find employment in January 1987. She located on advertisement for Equi2, a management consultant firm, and applied, and shortly after her arrival, promised extensive travelling and a new wardrobe and all these new things. So she applied, and Robinson hired her. And Clampett began staying at several local hotels near Equi2 offices. On June 15, 1987, Clampett left to have a meeting with Robinson. She has not been seen since.
This is like... We're not getting any details of the bit. They're just on the missing list.
Her missing person case remains open.
So they're just off. We don't ever know.
I will go back on backtrack. Some we will find and some we won't. Like, there's still many never
so
found.
So he is very clever then?
Very.
With his murders and stuff.
But you've got to remember, this is over like 20-ish years. So, yeah. Like, it's not like he's doing it all in 3 years.
But where's the internet kicking in? Is this advertising on the internet?
No. So this is like old school. We're in the early 80s. Yeah, yeah, yeah. to mid-80s. It's probably in existence, but it's not...
Do you think it was like MSN?
No, MSN's, well, MSN's our era. No.
Okay.
There's chat rooms, I suppose, but it's not nothing like what we had. Like, we were early 90s, so we're not that far behind. This is early 80s, so only 10 years later, but he goes into it, and I'll explain. Between 1987 and 1993, so that's the year I was born, to give an example, we didn't have the internet then as such, but I'm an internet baby. Like, I had dial-up connection, free internet after 7 p.m. Remember that?
Yeah, I used to ring my mate and go, tell your brother to get off the phone.
Remember, we had to share a line.
Yeah, I'd ring her and it'd be the and her brother Paul would be on the phone or on the, and I'd be like, I can't get hold of her because her brother's
on
the phone.
And we used to sit on the house phone for hours.
Oh, yeah, I loved it.
So between 1987 and 1993, Robinson was incarcerated, first in Kansas on multiple fraud convictions and later in Missouri for another fraud conviction and parole violations. So that's why there's big gaps. And that's where earlier on I said, the investigator said there's big gaps. Like, we don't know what...
Yeah, we don't know what's gone on there, if other things have gone on or...
Exactly. At the Western Missouri... This is fucked. At the Western Missouri Correctional Facility, he met 49-year-old Beverly Bonner, the prison librarian. And upon his release in 1994, she left her husband.
No, don't say she went with him.
Who was the prison doctor and moved to Kansas to work for him.
What is am I one?
Well, I think so.
She left the husband.
She knows he's a con artist. Like, she knows what he's away for. And she's gone like, I'll fall for your job. There's more to it.
Yeah.
After Robinson arranged for Bonner's...
I mean, was he a catch, though? Well, obviously not da-da-da-da, but was she like, ooh?
Possibly. But because she left her husband, so you know what alimony is? No. So that's where, like, when you're married in America, we have something similar, but, like, you got to pay alimony. That's, like, when you're married in America and you divorce, you have, like, an agreement where, like, the husband will pay you. Like, whether
if you leave him, if you divorce...
Or if you're the big earner, you'll pay him. So it's like it's like child support-ish. But
you just pay him if you divorce him? Absolutely
don't quote me on like the legalities, but alimony is when you divorce or leave a partner.
No.
You have to like make sure they're still okay.
No.
No, I know.
I'd sign the prenup.
Yeah, well, yeah. we want prenup.
We want prenup. Hey! But absolutely not.
Cleverly, Robinson arranged for the women, so Bonner, her alimony checks to be forwarded to Kansas, which is to a post office box, if that makes sense. So he's gone, oh, you know those checks you're going to get? Make sure you get them forwarded on.
Mm.
And he was taking them.
Okay, yeah.
Okay? Her family never heard from her again.
This is like a mystery.
And this went on for years. Bonner's mother was forwarding all the checks to Robinson, and he continued cashing them.
Because she didn't know.
Even after she went missing.
Because she didn't know.
She thought she was alive. Like, or, and he's been getting these checks going. Hey.
Yeah, he's so clever. He could be one of the most clever
I agree, actually. Like, cunning and in terms
this
of con
is
artists.
This is just baffling.
Madness.
It's a mystery.
So after his release, Robinson also discovered the internet and roamed around online chat rooms using the name Slave Master. Looking for women who enjoyed playing in submissive partner roles during sex.
Okay.
An early online correspondent was Sheila Faith, who was 45, who had a 15-year-old disabled daughter, Debbie Faith, who was a wheelchair user due to spina bifida. Robinson, portraying himself as a wealthy businessman and philanthropist, which is like a charity. When you do philanthropy, it's like you give often to charity. It's just like another terminology for it. He offered to pay Debbie's medical expenses and give Sheila a job. Okay? Yeah. So she met him online. She's got a daughter. Obviously, having a disabled daughter is awful, but it will cost a lot of money. He said, I'll box you.
Oh, no.
The mother and daughter moved...
And that's just what she probably felt like she needed as 100%. Well, like a hero.
100%. Like, I don't blame her. Like, the mother and daughter moved from California to Kansas City and immediately disappeared.
No.
Robinson then cashed Faith, the daughters. So he cashed her pension, so the mum's pension and the daughter's disability checks for the next seven years.
Don't tell me.
Both gone. So
stop it.
They left and immediately disappeared, but he continued checking her pension checks.
He's just on it.
And disability checks for 7 years. So he's getting the alimony from Bonner.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's scamming the world anyway. He's getting her pension and the disability check. So that's just three that we know of.
He's horrendous, but he's getting a sick scammer. Like, he's getting away with this.
100%.
Left, right and centre. Where the fuck are they going? I'm getting sick of it.
No, I know.
Because I need to know.
Robinson became well known in increasingly popular BDSM chat rooms in 1999.
Oh, okay.
So he was getting, like, known.
Oh, like, okay? what was he called? The slave master. Yeah, slave big master. Daddy.
Oh, God.
Big daddy of the BDSM chat rooms, babe.
In 1999, he offered a job and a...
not again, hon.
And a bond... But this was the difference. It was a job and a bondage relationship.
Oh, like a contract.
Isabella Lueka, who was a 21-year-old Polish immigrant living in Indiana. When she moved to Kansas City, Robinson gave Lueka an engagement ring, despite still being married. But let's not forget, he's got a wife and four kids.
Where's
No, I know. We can't
he's
blame
him. He's busy.
I know, but I just think...
No, but where's your fella?
No, but the world's different. She was probably a housewife with the four
busy.
Kids.
He's busy.
He's away at work.
He's chocker. He's buried about 20 birds. Where are you?
I know. But we can't, like...
Why am I laughing? Not funny.
Whenever we laugh, it's because she's wise. Like, she's funny, so I'm laughing at her.
You know, I'm just laughing because I'm like, well, I don't know.
But what I mean is, like, I think you've got to remember, they probably had a very traditional... She was at home with the four kids and he was out at work. She's not going to go, what did you do today?
You're moving all these women over and
why would she know that? He's going, oh, we're staying in this motel. I'm going to give you the job. He's not paying nothing. I'll give you the job.
And he's getting all this dough.
Mm. So, sorry, let me move to. So, despite still being married and he brought her to the county registrar. I mean, I'm okay for a minute. Where he did pay for it. In fact, yeah, fuck it. He did pay for a marriage license, but he never picked it up. So he's not committing, like, bigamy or whatever that thing is. You know, you're married to more than one person. It's illegal.
Yeah.
So he's gone, oh, yeah, we're married. Like, let's go to the registrar. We'll sign it. But he never, ever picked up and filed it.
Okay.
So it's unclear whether she believed they were actually married, if that makes sense. But she did tell her parents she was married. So in my head, she thought they got married and they're married. But she never told her parents her husband's name, which is odd. But she did sign a 115-item slave contract that gave Robinson almost total control.
Like 50 Shades of Grey.
Over every aspect of her life, including her bank account. Now, there's another case. Isaiah Keynes. Oh,
God, you're good with the names. I just can't remember any.
And he had like three or four girls living with him. There's a film and it's the girl who plays, she's in Orange is the New Black, the drug addict one. She plays one of the victims. Really, I'll have to find it. It's on Amazon Prime.
Is it a case? Like
real
a,
life, yeah. Is it...
What, and he had like...
I want to say his name is like Ezekiel, but I'm...
What, he had different birds
he had, like,
under contract?
Under contracts, and
BDSM.
And they wouldn't leave. They'd be like, I can't leave, I've got this
but
contract.
But it was bondage, or it was...
But he then was like, killer. I think he did kill a few of them, or had babies to them, and, you know, raped them, kept them under contract.
So this is like the 50 Shades of Grey contract?
With a bit of murder, yeah.
Well, obviously. What I mean, you're not getting on my bank card.
No, but what I mean, it's not okay. Like, she's been hoodwinked. Into Simon.
Hoodwinked?
Hoodwinked is like fooled. She's been tricked. She's been fooled. She's been hoodwinked in this to this. Like, I've met someone, I'm married, but then she signed a contract.
No.
She did agree to a BDSM style relationship. So
yeah,
that's not,
okay, yeah.
She did, but it gave control, like I say, to almost every aspect of her life, including bank accounts. Now, in 1999.
Sorry, can I just ask a personal question? Do you reckon.
I don't like BDSM, if that's what you want to know.
Do you reckon right you'd sign, like, a contract?
No.
If it was, like, an unreal fella. Like, 50, well, he's a show, but in the book, he was fab in my head.
I think if you're down for that type of sexual...
Would you sign the contract?
I don't...
In the book, Did you read the book?
Yeah, I know, I know. I love the films.
The film was shit.
See, I like all of the films. Like, it's a bit like fantasy or whatever.
No, because the bears was a game. But in the book, I was like, okay.
But she loved it. I don't think I'd like.
Like, would you sign the contract?
She did it. I don't know. I probably.
I feel like I would.
Who knows? If someone said to you, like, you're going to be a gazillionaire overnight, you can do whatever the fuck you want, but I need to just whip it every now and then. Some people will
100%.
Go. 100%. Exactly. Whereas, I don't know. Like, but not I'm not trying to be a moral card, high ground, like, but, like, I don't know. I don't know.
No, but it's sexy, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't know if I like that. Like, that.
Like the red dream of pain?
Like, maybe I go, woo!
Yeah, I think
but then maybe
sexy.
I'll go... and run away.
You can't, you know the contract.
I just think I mean I've never, you
know, if it was some unreal fella, like if it was Eminem, I wouldn't even have to sign the contract.
I was gonna say, like, you'd be doing it willingly.
I wouldn't read the contract.
You'd be like, I'll do it for free. I don't know. Who am I? Probably.
Oh yeah, come on.
I mean, who am I? Like, why am I pretending? Like, I don't know.
Okay,
good question though.
Good question, isn't it?
I know.
I was
anyone out there?
Yeah, no, fuck off. Hey, fuck off. Eminem, Slim Shady, Marshall Mathers, please hit me up.
Okay. You could be into that, like, should I be this?
Oh, yeah. Any day, babe, come at me.
Well, let me just reiterate. So he shall the contract, I've discussed, which gave him control to every aspect of his life.
Mm-hmm.
In 1999, she disappeared.
Mm. Robinson
told a web designer that he employed that she had been caught smoking marijuana and was deported.
Naughty
cow. So she was a Polish immigrant, so he's gone, oh, she's had to go. She's
what a grass.
She's been caught smoking drugs. No, she's disappeared. She's not there anymore. But he's had to tell people, oh, she's been deported. And no one would question that, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Her body was found in Robinson's farm. Which
in his farm. Finally, bit of an answer.
Yep.
God, you're leaving me with like a puzzle.
I know. In March 2000, a 27-year-old licensed nurse named Suzette Troughton moved from Michigan to Kansas to travel with Robinson as a submissive sex slave. So again, willingly at this stage.
Oh, fucking hell.
Troughton's mother received several type letters signed by her daughter and mailed to them while they were abroad. So she's receiving these letters and it looks like they're abroad. They're from her. She signed them. Although the envelopes all bore Kansas City postmarks. So she's like, we're travelling the world. And
but they're from there. They're
coming from Kansas. So it's a bit question mark.
It's a bit odd.
The letters, her mother said, were uncharacteristically free from typos and errors that her daughter would normally
would
do.
Yeah, like me.
Like, there's certain words I always spell wrong. And like,
I type in Scouse, don't I? Like,
let me tell you, Hannah doesn't have predictive text turned on.
Oh, no, I don't know. I can't do that.
Baffles me.
No, I have
I'm
normal.
Not, I'm not a great speller. Like,
not at all. Yeah, but I got a B in English, you know? But you know,
I did English language for A-level. Like, I'm not like...
You know, but it's... Since leaving school, I can't spell for shit because of texting.
Well, but I mean, think about it. We don't write. We don't.
I don't have predictive, and I literally shorten everything to like two letters.
Yes, I know. Like,
so
I know what
they have to guess, and
she messages me, and I'm like,
that's why I'm a voice noter.
Oh,
I'm a serious. Like, I'll do 10 minutes, but
that's why I should a podcast.
Yeah, if I've got a situation that's happened, let you know. There's a 10 minute voice note.
Basically. That makes sense though, doesn't it? Like the mum would know.
Would know how she talks. That's because what I mean. Like you'd know how
even
I
even though
type.
It's early 2000s, we know like
how
we
you speak. Wrote letters yeah, yeah. And no, how you like speak. Even yeah. Like I don't know different like abbreviations and
of things.
Yeah,
yeah, 100%. Robinson then told her mother that she had ran off with an acquaintance after stealing money. So she's gone. Oh, I'm fine on letters with travel, I'm happy. And then when she hasn't heard from him for a while,
oh, he's
then gone, oh no, she ran away, like with one of my employees, like in one of my colleagues.
Was
her body was also found at Robinson's farm.
Oh, at the farm. So he's getting a bit more like,
mm-hmm. Clumsy. So over time, Robinson became increasingly careless. yeah, and his ability to avoid detection.
Because he thinks he's sick.
They all do. They all get invincible. They all get cocky. Sorry, I'm just fixing myself. I'm awfully uncomfortable. By 1999, he had attracted the attention of authorities in Kansas and Missouri, and his name frequently came up in missing person investigations. So you've got to remember, there's a string of women who have moved on to this
and
amazing job
and
then got off.
Yeah.
He was arrested in June 2000 at his farm near, I'm going to say, Lekang, Kansas, after a woman filed a sexual battery complaint against him. And another charged him with stealing his sex toys.
Oh, right.
The theft charge finally gave investigators probable cause they would need to obtain search warrants. So he's getting cocky, slacking about. Someone's filed sexual battery charges. Someone's reporting for stealing sex toys. And the name keeps popping up. So they've now got the warrant. On the farm, the task force found the decaying bodies of two women, later identified as Lueka, the immigrant, Polish immigrant who said she'd been deported, and Troughton, the one previous to that, in two 85-pound chemical drums, or barrels.
The barrels.
Across the state line of Missouri, investigated search a storage facility where Robinson rented two garage. They found three chemical drums containing corpses subsequently identified as Bonner, the one who left the prison, Faith and Faith's daughter.
Oh.
So the mum and the disabled daughter.
Girl. Yeah. And was this in like...
There's pictures on the internet.
Oh, is it? You've seen it?
Like...
Show me. Like in like acid and that? Or just in the barrel?
Let me get it up quickly.
And where'd you find them?
I follow an Instagram page.
You sent me that, the crime one?
No, that crime scene cleaners is like just people cleaning up crime scenes. This
I like
one.
That page.
No, it's great, but.
Remember that one you sent me ages ago where you see the actual.
That's called Vanessa's tripod. If anyone wants to know, just say.
Are you meant to see that though? Are you meant to say that? I think it's like illegal.
No, they've been released to the public. Like all these crime scenes, whenever you see a crime scene photo, it's because they've been released. No, they don't do it as much these days. Like, murders now will not be released. But back then, they would release these pictures.
Oh, okay.
And that's...
To, like, scare.
That's why we can now see them.
Yeah.
But they are hidden, kind of. And, right, let me just... Sorry, just bear with me, because I just want to just quickly show you. Where will they be? I've got the Instagram page up now, but I just don't know how far that...
No. Give me that.
Swipe across. I'm not going to put them anywhere, but like...
What's that?
Let me see. That's a body bent over.
No!
That's someone's back.
You're joking.
Awful.
So it's like a big Jeffrey Dahmer tub
kind
with
of,
like...
Yeah. We've all seen that video footage of Jeffrey Dahmer's barrels getting carried down the stairs.
Ooh, the
imagine
leg,
that.
It's
but
so
metal.
Skinny.
Well, that's all the flesh has come off it and...
So what's in there with it, like a chemical?
Usually they will put chemicals to like...
That's really going
that's
through
like
me.
That's bent over.
That's horrendous.
I know, awful.
I need a wee, you know?
I know, but we're nearly finished.
Do you think I should... No.
You can hold it.
Cut that bit out,
no,
sorry.
No, it's fine. Keep it in. Just hold it, hon.
Breaking the seal.
So as I've said, so there was two found and then there was three more found in another location, which we've discovered were Bonner, the prison librarian, and the mother and daughter duo that went missing all those years before. The five women were killed in the same way, by one or more blows to the head with a blunt instrument.
Oh, okay, because we didn't know any of that.
In 2002, Robinson stood trial in Kansas for the murder of Troughton, Lueka, Stassi, along with other multiple lesser charges. After the longest criminal trial in Kansas history, he was convicted on all counts. Robinson received the death penalty for the murders and life imprisonment for other murders because she was killed before Kansas reinstated the death penalty. So because we're over 20 years, some they've gone, well, that happened when the death penalty existed, so you're getting the death penalty.
Yeah.
But some existed before that, so you'll just get life. That's just to explain that. Because is like a law. Like if if I killed someone, the death penalty didn't exist, we're not going to get the death penalty. Do you know what I mean?
Really?
Well, if it doesn't exist, you're not going to get the death penalty.
But now it does.
But now it does, so you allow get the death penalty, but the other one didn't. It's the other way around, though. The death penalty existed then, didn't now.
Don't get it.
He received...
with their heads, babe.
Well, yeah. He received 5 to 20 year prison sentences.
Five?
For interfering with the parental custody of Stassi's baby.
Yeah.
Which was 20 years that she didn't know that she was kidnapped.
Yeah, to the brother.
Yeah. And 7 months for theft. So he's got mounting charges. After his Kansas convictions, Robinson then faced murder charges in Missouri, because you've got to remember, we're over a few states here.
Mm-hmm.
And the evidence that was discovered in that state. So Missouri aggressively pursued capital punishment, which is the death penalty, and conviction. So Robinson's attorneys wanted to avoid a trial here because they wanted him to just admit it and like get it over, because they knew he'd get the death penalty, if that makes sense. Chris Costa, the Missouri prosecutor, insisted as a condition of any plea bargain that Robinson led authorities to the bodies of Stassi, Godfrey and Clampett. Robinson, who has never cooperated with investigators, refused. However, Costa faced pressure to make the deal because this case was not technically airtight. So basically, because there's a lot of state lands, no bodies.
There's not really, they're all missing.
It's very hard to convict someone for murder without a body. So,
yeah, but they're all linked to him. Yeah, but
exactly. So they're saying, like, it's not airtight. So the prosecutors, not the defendants, the government side are going, we need a body.
But
because they could get out on a technicality.
But there is them ones.
He's in locked up anyway, but you want to get them for everything,
don't
you?
For everything, yeah.
But
you can surely tie him with all of them.
Among other issues, where there was no unequivocal evidence that any of the murders had been committed within his jurisdiction. So he's going like, I have not got even a body or anyone murdered in my state, my jurisdiction. So you can understand. Robinson, on the other hand, faced pressure to plead guilty to avoid an almost certain death via the death sentence. And failing that, another capital murder back in Kansas. So he's got pressure to admit stuff so he doesn't die. Mm. Pressure from the DA to go, you need to admit this because I've not even got an airtight condition. I've got no bodies. It's a big clusterfuck.
Mm.
And that's why it's the Kansas longest standing trial.
Yeah, just went on and on.
Yeah, on and on and on. When it became clear that some of the women's remains would never be found without Robinson's cooperation, a compromise was reached. In a carefully scripted plea in October 2003, Robinson acknowledged that Costa had enough evidence to convict him of capital murder for the deaths of Godfrey, Clampett, Bonner and Faiths. Though his statement was technically a guilty plea because he's gone like, yeah, you've got enough evidence.
He didn't actually say it,
yeah. But it was accepted as such by the Missouri court. Observers remarked that it was notably devoid of any remorse or specific acceptance of responsibility. So the DA's happy because they kind of got what they wanted, but the victim's family are going, well, he hasn't said it. Yeah.
And they're just left in the dark.
There's no remorse. Your alarm. We're nearly done.
Sorry.
It's okay, my love. That's a good little alarm tune, actually. Yeah,
it's going to go off again.
Just pause.
I've snoozed it.
Okay. Robinson received a life sentence without the possibility of parole for each of the 5 murders. In November 2015, not that long ago, the Kansas Supreme Court vacated the Troughton and Stassi murder convictions on technicalities, but upheld the Lewicka conviction as its accompanying death sentence. The ruling marked the first time Kansas highest court upheld a death sentence since the reinstatement of capital punishment in 1994. So Kansas stopped the death penalty, then brought it back. Yeah. So it's just, this is confusing, I'm trying to...
But they haven't got him on many,
not really.
Think about what he's done.
I've never been found as well.
Yeah, like they've not really got him on anything. Like this one, but...
Robinson currently remains on death row in El Dorado Correctional Facility in Kansas. He's still
going. We need someone to go and talk to us and give us a doc. Like, what's going on? Someone go in. He's not talking.
No. Again, he's another one. That's why these cases are so interesting. They're so fucked.
Sick of him.
But because they don't speak, they're not
They've not really got that much on him, have they?
No.
Because I think with him, and we've said it, it's like I'm being bored now, but he has been very clever from the start, and he's only fucked up like a few times. Handful even though times. You can link everything to him.
You can't prove it.
You can't prove it, and he's not spooky.
And that's why they're not doing these big jury trials, because they can go, well...
Yeah, like, they're just going to go...
Number one, there's no bodies on some of them.
Fuck's sake.
I know. In 2005, the wife, remember, filed for divorce after 41...
Oh, hon, are you... Fuck off. What? 41 years? Is she messing?
41 years of marriage, citing incompatibility and...
Incompatibility?
And I can never say this word. Irreconcilable differences. No, he's a serial killer, babe.
He's a freak. Like, is she... She's tapped. Is she messing? 41 years, babe!
In the following years, Stacey... So remember Stacey, she was murdered, but she had a daughter. She then... She was the one that had the fake adoption. So she filed a civil suit. So she's older now, she's in her 20s.
Yeah.
She filed a civil suit against Truman Medical Center in Kansas City and a social worker called Karen Gaddis. The acute caused Gaddis of putting Robinson in contact with Stacey and her newborn daughter in 1984 after he told Gaddis that he ran a charitable organization assisting in unwed mothers with white babies. So what that's basically saying is the daughter's filed suit.
Because she's found out that
she's been adopted illegally. Yeah. So she's then filed suit against the people that were on the documentation.
But do you think she was happy being brought up?
I don't think she's not happy having the parents she's got. But you would be like, what?
Oh, no, of course. I'm like, just saying, like, I hope
I don't... I mean, hopefully. I hope she's had a good life and stuff. But it's not the best situation to be in. In 2007...
No.
Heather and the hospital, that's a girl's name, reached a settlement for an undisclosed sum. And Heather said she would split it with her grandmother, her biological grandmother. So not, obviously, the mum's dead, but her biological grandmother, who doesn't know anything about all this. You've got to remember, she just went missing and she split it with her. Patricia, her name was. And Heather won second judgment in 2007, preventing Robinson from profiting any future potential book sales.
Yeah, he don't need no more dollars in. Well, he's had it all.
She's gone, well, hang on a minute. What if he just decides maybe he might have bought or make a film? So she's won a judgment that he can never profit from any of this. Good. In 2006, the body of a young woman was found in a barrel in the area of Iowa. Where Robinson reportedly had a business partner. She was initially considered the possible victim, but was later identified and ruled out. So that was just a little bit of an interesting thing. So, as I've mentioned, John Edward Robinson remains on death row in Kansas. His case is a chilling reminder of the dangers posed by predators who exploit technology and trust. Often cited, as I've said, as the first internet serial killer, Robinson's ability to manipulate his victims and evade capture for decades has made him a subject of enduring public fascination and horror.
Yeah.
And that is why...
We don't talk to strangers.
Don't talk to strangers on the internet.
Yeah, because he kind of used that, didn't he? 100%. To, like, prey on them.
So he was doing so well
behind the screen. He was doing well.
And we know the internet is a dark place.
Ugh.
Like, we do. As much as we love it and rely on it in
you
so many ways.
Trust it, can
it
you?
Is a dark, dark place.
He used that, he latched onto it, but he was switched on. And he knew what he was doing.
He was, but that was the story of
very
John
interesting.
Edward Robinson.
Very interesting.
So yeah, if you like this and you like to listen to more of this, please check in and follow us on at Don't Talk to Strangers podcast on Instagram. You can email us with suggestions or stories of your own that you want us to tell out loud. That's don'ttalktostrangerspod@gmail.com. Leave us reviews. You can listen on Spotify, anywhere you get your podcast, and you can watch on YouTube. If you want to watch... Who knows? We do get people watching, actually.
Don't watch.
But I'm not a fan, so, like...
Don't watch.
Yeah. But, yeah, I hope you've enjoyed listening. And, yeah.
We hope you don't talk to strangers.
Exactly. Don't talk to strangers. Peace.
Bye.
Bye.